is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
London, Normandy, Paris. Mary Kissel, the executive vice president of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, moving through Heathrow Airport, De Gaulle Airport, in order to reach her destinations these last days. I welcome her home, but we begin with a report on Heathrow because there is a headline in the Wall Street Journal that is alarming and is part of the recovery, part of the cost of living, part of the layoffs that the airport airlines went through and the airports went through during COVID. All of this is the demand is there, but the supply of labor is not, we're told by the airlines. So much so that 24 hours ago, Heathrow was asking airlines not to sell any more tickets. Now the headline is 12 hours of misery at Heathrow. Huge crowds, lost bags, endless cancellations. For all of you entertaining going to Europe through Heathrow. Mary, what was your experience going and coming from Heathrow? Is it as scary as this headline looks? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think it's actually worse. If you can avoid flying into Heathrow Airport, I would recommend it. I had the incredibly unique experience of being directed through an immigration line to the automatic machines, and I entered through the gates with the green light, got to the other side and found a locked door, as did several other people who were walking in behind me. So we sat in a kind of no man's land between the immigration machine and the actual entry into the security area. And we couldn't exit because I thought, gosh, you know, we might be arrested if we try to go back out the other way. So it was just a real mess, quite just a disaster.
Luggage, we're told not to count on anything in your luggage if you're using it at the other end. Take what you need in your pockets. Did you have trouble with your luggage?
Yeah, it took about an hour and a half to get the bags, and I hear that that's pretty fast these days. There were crowds of people waiting around, and every time a bag would come out, these cheers would erupt as, you know, people would, you know, yell and scream in relief and then quickly exit the airport as fast as they possibly could.
De Gaulle, how was De Gaulle compared to Heathrow?
Yeah, this is the ultimate insult to the Brits, right, John? In that Charles de Gaulle, which is famously, like the French, quite complicated, shall we say, was the model of efficiency. Got off the airplane, the bags came right out, pas problème. So when Charles de Gaulle is doing better than Heathrow, you know, the world is upside down.
Now, you were in London. We spoke last week at the moment of Boris Johnson's distress when he was challenged by his party and the opposition party for his conduct over these many months. After that, Boris Johnson announced that he was stepping down from the premiership in time. There's a process underway now to choose a new leader of the Conservatives. At the same time, London is going through a period of labor strikes, slowdowns. I'm not quite sure what the appropriate word is. In the railroad, which is vital to the livelihood of people of Britain, far more so than in the U.S. The railroad takes you everywhere. I believe there were slowdowns everywhere across the city. How is it doing, given that you just avoided the heat wave, Mary? Apparently, they're melting now.
Well, inflation is just at the top of everyone's minds. It's a critical problem for the economy, and it's not a particularly partisan issue. Both those on the right and the left are worried about it. And as far as the strikes go, John, I was surprised to find actually quite a bit of public support for them because everybody is in the same boat. So whether it's the barristers or the rail workers or others, I think we're only at the beginning of the unrest, and it's crippling because unlike, for instance, our economy, where we have multiple big cities and engines of innovation and growth, London really is the big kahuna, right? So many of the professional classes, I mean, of course, there are other big cities in Britain like Birmingham and others, but London really dominates them all. And so if you have strikes of rail workers, you know, most people don't live in central London. It's very expensive. They live in the suburbs and they depend on those rail services. So it's disturbing. And again, I just think it's the beginning.
Most recently, reading the news out of London, they reported an inflation number. They call it cost of living in London of 9.1%. Well, we caught up today, Mary. The report in the Wall Street Journal, inflation hits four-decade high in the U.S. of 9.1%, led by gasoline. Shelter food increases were also contributors, showing that the troubles in Britain don't stay in Britain. They come to the United States as well. So you've traveled from one side of the Atlantic to the other to experience the same disruption, which is the recovery, which is a product of the war in Ukraine, which is a supply shock problem because of the troubles in China, which is the extravagance of the Trump administration and Biden administration to think it was a demand shock and push cash into the hands of the American people. Oh, we're told all those reasons, but the fact is we come to today and there's trouble. So we'll leave the trouble at Heathrow, not so much in De Gaulle, because Mary was in Normandy, a gorgeous, gorgeous landscape, especially in summer, to attend the de Tocqueville conversation. What is that, Mary?
So Alexis de Tocqueville wrote the famous book, Democracy in America, several hundred years ago, where he and a friend set off in their 20s to observe this great experiment that we have, the good and the bad of it. And the family now lives actually in the chateau where Alexis wrote the book. And they have started something called the Tocqueville Conversations, which get together U.S. and French policymakers, but also business people, academics, think tankers, journalists, to try to reinvigorate and really reinforce relationships between our two great countries. This year, the topic was Putin's war in Ukraine, the different points of view that European nations, both from the Eastern Front and the rich nations of Western Europe have versus the United States. And it was a fascinating conversation. I think the dividing lines are stark. I sat on the stage with the foreign minister of Lithuania, for instance, who gave an impassioned plea for more money and more help and certainly more urgency from the United States and the West, because he sees the danger. In fact, Putin has talked publicly about the Baltic states and the fact that Russian expansionism is something that's very much on his mind. And so you contrast that with the former French foreign minister, Hubert Védrine, who was also on my panel, who is close to Macron, who takes his advice. And, he very eloquently laid out the French position, which is effectively that we have to talk to Putin and it's time to negotiate and the killing must stop, et cetera, but with no real plan to force Putin to the negotiating table or increase the leverage of Ukraine. So it was an important event. It happens annually. And I think it's good, too, because in the United States, we get very little focus on France, our oldest friend and a nuclear power and quite an important economy in Europe. And so it's great to see this kind of engagement start to occur.
And your sense, Mary, in the room, because these are people who travel widely, is democracy at risk? Is that the debate now, or is it a matter of territory? Are we talking landscape, not democracy?
No, there's certainly popular discontent, not just in France, where Emmanuel Macron survived what was a very real challenge from the far right, Marine Le Pen and the National Front. But they also had a conversation with the Netherlands' most prominent conservative journalist, a man named Weird Duke, who talked at length about the farmers' protests in the Netherlands. The government there of Mark Rutte has imposed some really what can only be termed outrageous environmental regulation that will put many Dutch farmers completely out of business. And they're now driving in mass down the roads in their tractors and trucks. And they too enjoy popular support, much like the strikers in Britain, because the inflationary pressures are terrible. The economy is in decline, and the citizens of these great Western democracies don't see politicians really grappling with these problems or even acknowledging that inflation really hurts the poorest in our society. And now is not the time to be engaging in fantasies about what might happen 100 years from now. You've got to take action to attract investment, to encourage businesses to, you know, stay open and to hire. And, you know, and it's just, they just don't seem to have grasped the mettle in Europe. And the poor in particular are the ones who will suffer the most.
Mary, back to London. There is a leadership contest right now. And I take note that two of those said to be in the final running, Liz Truss, the foreign minister, and Tom Tugendhat, a member of the Conservative Party, are people whom you have recommended to me heretofore. And I studied Tugendhat. Liz Truss as foreign minister, we see her much in the news since the Ukraine crisis. Tom Tugendhat is an eloquent, outspoken, extremely well-educated young man. He's 49. So these two are contesting for the leadership. It does appear that it's the former chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, versus the field. Do you have a sense, Mary, either way, which this can go? Because there are policy issues here having to do with taxes and recovery.
I actually wrote a note to Stephen's clients about this just in these last days, John. The question here is not so much the personality of the candidates, it's the ideas. And the Tory party has a very clear choice. They're either going to continue down the path Boris Johnson took them down, which is tax and spend and try to buy Labour votes and drift away from the conservative policies that really enlivened the British economy and lifted all boats, or they're going to go with, you know, a policy that is a supply side change. Rishi Sunak is in effect, a continuation of Boris Johnson. I don't think he's particularly conservative in his economic views. He is very popular. But I think his premiership would look a lot like John Major's. And I think that ultimately it would condemn the Tories to opposition for a decade or more. Tom Tugendhat and Liz Truss are more Thatcherite on foreign policy. They were not for Brexit. So there is some concern about them in that they may not be as energetic in trying to promote economic policies that would, again, stimulate growth and job creation in Britain. There's also two others, Penny Mordaunt, who's the trade secretary. There's a lot of enthusiasm behind her, but there's concern that culturally she's more on the left than she is on the right, and she's untested. And another young MP, Sumi, and sorry, I'm going to mangle her name here, sorry, who really looks a lot like Thatcher, although also a very young and untested candidate. But look, you know, it's not really about the age. It's not about the personality. It's about the ideas. So, you know, are they going to continue down the Boris path and risk losing the leadership for a generation, or are they going to return to what they believe in? That's the question.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, returned from Europe, escaped from Heathrow, survived. Otherwise, Mary could still be behind that locked door if she hadn't found some person to take pity on them. I wonder who's stuck behind that locked door right now, Mary. When we come back, we're turning to the Ukraine conflict and the remarks by the president that he's putting together an army of 100,000 to counterattack. Also remarks by the chancellor of Germany that they've got a major problem with little more than 100 days till November 1st and it gets cold in Northern Europe. I'm John Batchelor.